I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Georgina Barker. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a great pleasure. It's lovely to meet someone whose last name is Barker, to whom I'm not related. I don't think we're related.
Well, you never know how far back we might need to go. There might be a tie somewhere.
That's true. I sent my bodily parts off to one of these genetic DNA companies, so I've got lots of third and fourth cousins in the world, I've gathered.
Oh, there you go. No, I haven't sent off any of my bodily parts yet, but it might be something I might do one day, find out a bit more about myself.
Another way to connect with people, of course, is through photography, and particularly photographs with people in them. And have you found that photographs with people in them are intrinsically more interesting, both to you and to others, than just a big landscape scene? Or do you have a position about this, Georgina?
Well, funnily enough, I kind of do, because my father was actually a journalist and an editor of a newspaper group. And he always said to me, a photograph is useless if it doesn't have a person in it. But then there's been times that I've been, you know, say hiking through the Tasmanian mountains or something, and I'm taking photos and I'm getting my husband with our kid on his back in the backpack to turn around so I can take a photo, or I'm getting them from the back and I'm always making sure there's a person in the photo. Then I go to write a story about it and think, I really just need some photos just of the landscape. So I think, you know, depending what you're doing, I think there's a place for both, but
it's a very, very good example, because my wife and I were walking in Cradle Mountain, talking about Tasmania, not long ago. And you really, when you take a beautiful shot, and there's the lake and there's the peaks, you don't want any humans. You want the people doing a Facebook shot to get out of the road mm-hmm. or whatever. And it becomes a sort of an Ansel Adams moment, doesn't it? This beautiful, pristine, God-given landscape. And get the hell the people out of it.
Yeah, that's right. And then you've also got the aspect that it's really nice to have maybe one person in that shot to look like they've got it all to themselves.
Yes, that's a lovely thing. You feel that derivatively you are there. That's you looking out. It's a lovely idea. So how did you get into journalism? I'm guessing it because of these family connections, you were exposed.
Well, the advice from my dad was not to get into journalism, but anyway, I eventually did, and I studied journalism at Curtin and then started doing some work experience at Community Newspaper Group while I was still studying, and kept sort of doing that until they eventually paid me. And yeah, I worked there for a number of years on various newspapers. Then I travelled for a couple of years, came back, went back to Community Newspapers and did some more work there. Until I then took a bit of a shift and went and worked in a marketing department of a business somewhere. And it was during that time that I then started doing a little bit of freelance work, and to the point where I was able to then go out on my own and just do freelance work. And since then it's been, you know, a real mixed bag of corporate style writing, publicity, magazine, feature writing. Aside from the odd sort of travel story or something, I haven't really done any more writing for newspapers since the early days. And then I eventually did a photography diploma, I sort of added that to...
I was wondering when I was going to hear the word photography. So when you went to sort of Cub Reporter School, did you have a sort of a photography minor as part of a journalism? Do they require all of the students to carry a Leica and start snapping from an early age?
No, not really. I think it was an elective to be able to do photography, and I think I initially enrolled in it, but then realised the classes went much later than the other classes, and it was going to eat into my holidays too much, and I was, I think, heading north to work, and it just didn't really work for me. So unfortunately at that point I didn't do it, but you know, so you look back on these things and
think, oh, maybe you could have done it differently.
Well,
you have to live life without regret, Georgina. So you eventually made up for it by doing this diploma course in photography. And why did you feel the need to do that?
I'd always been really interested in photography and have always taken a lot of photos, much to everyone's annoyance. But so I thought perhaps I should get a bit more skill with it and add it to, you know, my work career, and be able to accompany my words with some of my photographs.
Yes.
And yeah, which I've done. So some has been standalone photography, and some has been, you know, I might write an article for a magazine and do the accompanying photography for that.
Now, you've been spending some time here in Fremantle, pretty much in the heart, taking photographs of a certain genre, you might say. Is that right?
Yep, I sure have.
What got you into doing that? And tell people before we start looking at some of these photographs what the genre is.
Yeah, well, look, it sort of came about right at the start of this year. I was waiting to get my kids off to, one kid to school, pre-primary full-time, and then the other one was going to a pre-kindy. So I have been doing a little bit of freelance work, but not a lot, and I was at the point once the school year started to ramp it up a bit, and I was going to start putting my feelers out for a bit more work. Then COVID hit and I figured, well, there's no point searching for work right now. So in the meantime, I might just do my own little project. So I live in Frio, very passionate about Fremantle. I thought doing something on my doorstep would be great, something that could potentially help support local businesses, give them a little bit of exposure. In saying that, I have a very small following on Instagram, so it probably hasn't helped them a lot, but that's how it all came about, you know. So, you know, trying to help local businesses, putting my passion for Fremantle into something, getting me taking some photographs and doing some writing. That's, you know, where it all came from.
Presently got you on this particular project. And just while we're at it, what's the Instagram handle when people do go looking?
Well, my page is at Georgina Barker Photography, and this particular project, which can be found there, is called Fremantle Corona Diaries. So I've been, just going to local businesses and chatting to and photographing mostly the owner, or, you know, it might be the manager, whoever, about how they've been affected over the last few months.
Well, one of the first photographs, or the first photograph that our listeners and readers will see is this one here. This looks very close to where we are currently talking.
It is, yes. So pretty much where just are downstairs. We? So this is Eleni Kakoulis, and she's the owner of Kakoulis Sister. And yeah, she was actually the first person I photographed as part of this. There wasn't any real reason for going there first, other than it was one of the few places that was open. And happened to walk in and ask if the owner was there. She was there that day, so we had a bit of a chat and I photographed her in the store.
So the photograph, I'm guessing from what you've said, but you'll clarify, is doing a number of things. It's got a context, namely the coronavirus period in Fremantle, Western Australia, or Australia, the world, in whenever, this year, and you've gone out, in a sense, recording it. Here's a shop which is open, here's the owner, there's context, and of course there's a bit of colour and movement in that photo. But is there more to it?
Well, I think it probably evolved into more than what it started as. I mean, this photograph here, I pretty much just asked her, you know, have you had to adapt your business? And she talked about them doing deliveries and people being able to order, you know, phone or email their order through and can either pick up at the door or they do deliveries, and, you know, just the things they've had to do within the store to, you know, hand sanitizer at the door, keep the number down of people in the store and that sort of thing, and any limits on certain items that they may have had. So, and it was, you know, my first little story there was pretty small. It was just kind of a quote from her, and then as I sort of went on and did more of these, I sort of grew the stories a little bit to pretty much what the maximum characters you can have in Instagram, and a lot of them, you know, I put a little bit of a personal slant on as well.
Wonderful. So then we have another photograph, which then is a sort of zooming in on a scene, which is really quite a fabulous scene. What have we got here?
Yeah, so this is Sam Murray. He's the owner of Captain Walker's Bicycles. I actually went there that day to photograph Drew Walker, who was the original owner of Captain Walker's Bicycles, and I didn't actually know that the store had changed hands. I've gone in to see Drew many times with my bikes, and we've sort of built up a, you know, friendship with him and his dog Toby. So I got a surprise when I walked in and found Sam there as the new owner, but we had a chat, and you could think it would be a really bad time to take over a business just a couple of weeks before coronavirus hit, but I think bike stores have been booming, so.
One of the good things, yeah. In fact, video stores might have made a comeback if they'd had their chance.
And I think, you know, business is really good for him that he's now shifting into a bigger premises and...
Isn't that a wonderful story?
Yeah, so that's really great.
The fear, of course, is that for each wonderful story, there might be one that's a little more intimidating. What have we got here?
So this is a photograph of Richard Lane. He's a musician.
I thought it was Richard, who recently passed away.
Yeah, and he's as most people would probably know, is a very talented musician. He's a music teacher and he owns Penny Lane's Music Workshop, which is just around the corner from my house. And he's been my guitar teacher in the past. Both my kids have gone to his Baba Lala workshops for children and babies. And yeah, so I went and photographed him and had a chat to him this day. And I put that photograph up, and if you go to the next one, at the time I was tossing up between that one and this one, and I put the one up, the earlier one, which also shows a part of his music shed and puts it sort of in context. And I thought, I'll save this one, I'll be able to use this one another time when I can perhaps write when he's back in business or something. And really tragically, I ended up posting this photograph of him closer up in the doorway of his music workshop just after he passed away.
On the Shipping News, Brett Lee Dix wrote a beautiful reflection on Richard's life and times, which has gone all the way around the world, been very touching and is viewed very regularly. He's touched the hearts of many people.
Oh, he's going to leave a real hole in the community, Richard, yeah.
Then we have another really lovely photo. The hands on the man with the hat holding a jar in his hand are almost in the position that female newsreaders and weather girls have to take when doing the evening news, which is something I'm struggling with and want to write something really caustic about. But what's going on here?
Well, at least he's got a paintbrush and a little jar of paint in his hand.
Yes, he's got an excuse for having his hands in those positions.
Yeah, so this is Ian D'Souza. He is a very well-known Fremantle.
I should have recognised Ian immediately.
Yeah, well-known Fremantle artist and much loved, and also, you know, internationally renowned as well. He too just lives down the road from me, and yeah, look, he's had some health issues lately, over the last couple of years, so it was certainly in a very high-risk category and very quickly went into isolation, and I took that sort of from a distance from his front gate, and he brought a painting out to sort of work on in his driveway for me to take a photo of him and have a chat from a distance. So, you know, he had stopped doing his classes and was revisiting old work that he'd been doing.
An interesting thing. Yes, I once bought a lovely piece from Ian, which was looking inside, like going into a flower and becoming part of it inside.
It's very amazing.
But we leave Ian, and we've got a lovely lady here sitting
that's in the Capri restaurant.
In the Capri, which has been here forever. Do you know how long the Capri's been open? I don't, but it's as long back as I can remember.
Yeah. It was, I think, in the 50s, pretty sure, because I did actually write an article on the Capri for Fabric Quarterly magazine last year, and I did the photography for it as well. And so this photo is actually a photograph that I took last year as part of that article, but the conversation I had with her obviously was from the time that this was posted, and her talking about how the really quiet streets reminded her back from the 50s and 60s. It's Maria Pizzali. She's the boss of the Capri restaurant. She's a nonna, and she's got quite a few grandchildren working at the restaurant, and they're kind of the future of the place.
Everybody has to go to the Capri. I took my two eldest granddaughters when they were a bit younger there a few years ago, and they're brought up by a mother to have particular sort of noses and tastes for food, so they analyse very closely everything they had, starting with the minestrone soup when it arrived. I love the Capri.
Yeah, it's great.
And then?
And this is Matteo Massetti. He is the owner and head chef at La Sosta. And no, I was keen to go and chat to him because I first met him at my son's kindy last year. He came in to teach the class how to make gnocchi. So yeah, it was great to go in and have a chat to him. And you know, obviously the restaurant was empty and they were doing takeaways and also were cooking for the St. Patrick's doorstep dinners yes. program as well, which was sort of the first thing that got their kitchen kick-started again. And he said it was, you know,
that a great thing for everybody.
Yeah, really, really great. And he said when that request came through, it was sort of the first little bit of light he saw at the end of the tunnel.
So this is a project brilliantly conceived where St. Pat's are delivering food to people who need it. And it comes from a number of restaurants and cafes around Fremantle who actually are remunerated and come in and do the work.
Yeah, yeah.
And so other people significantly contributed financially to the to the whole project.
No, it's a great, between the four restaurants they were doing 200 meals a day and it continues. I think they're now doing it through until the end of September.
That's great. So La Sosta, of course, is sort of Sicilian in its cuisine, isn't it? Probably a generalist menu these days. But
I'm not sure if it's got, well, as you say, it's got the Sicilian background. I actually haven't sort of looked too deeply into the real, you know, regional origins from Italy, but I
feeling it
put
is.
It this way, I love it. I love all the food there. So.
Oh, and this looks like Jenny Jackson, who the Fremantle Shipping News interviewed, probably in the middle of last year from Paper Bird.
Yep, sure is.
Isn't that a great little place?
Oh, it's so nice. It's well, in the day I took this photograph and had the chat with her, I actually took my two young kids in with me. And they had a lovely time playing with the soft toys and looking through some of the books while we had a chat. So it's great.
There's a lovely area out the back of that building where kids can play as well.
Yeah, and they do story time out the back there. And yeah, they normally do a lot of workshops, you know, art workshops and holiday programs and everything, but they'd shifted a lot online.
Well, Jenny looks like she's anything but the proprietor of this business. She looks like she's sitting, reading, falling asleep.
Yeah.
Well, she's awake, but. Now, where are we?
So this is then just down the road at New Edition Bookshop. This is Alan Sheardown, he's the owner there. And yeah, he's just out the front of his shop. It was good to chat to him, and it was funny. I was talking to him about how he came about owning the bookshop. He
yes.
already owned a bookshop in Vic Park, and his memories of New Edition dated back to when it was in South Terrace, and it was. Do you remember that bookshop? And it was quite dark, and there was few rooms, and you know I remembered it as
yes.
well. And he said it. He just had this memory of it being sort of one of the first place. He was out on his own at night and he bought his own first book, and then when it came to be closing down, when it was in its large premises in High Street, someone sort of mentioned it to him. He's like, oh, I really don't want a second bookshop, but I can't, you know, it's just part of Fremantle, I have to save it.
So he
did.
And it's been such a success, and with Paper Bird just down Henry Street and New Edition there, and then of course you've got the other lovely little secondhand bookshop.
Yeah, who I haven't actually been to see. But yeah, it was interesting. He was saying that in the very early days of the sort of restrictions that came in, people were coming in and buying complete sets of books and stacks of 10 books because they thought, you know, we're going to be locked at home for so long. And there was just like this mad buy up of books.
Well, better thing to buy than loads of toilet paper,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Now, here's a lovely photograph and the subject of the photograph has taken up a position with a clothing store, I think.
Yes, so that's Penny Hislop just down the road here. She's the owner of Eros. Look, she'd actually been closed. I walked past one day and just happened to find her in there, which
oh,
was
good.
Quite opportune because she had been closed and was just on the verge of reopening just for appointments.
Right.
So at that point,
I suppose that's the way you could do it. It'd be like the hairdressers eventually, they could take one or two people in, but no more because of the restrictions.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Buffy Murray. She's the owner of Peco in on Ray Avenue.
It's a lovely little store.
Yeah, and funnily enough, she's actually the sister of Sam from the bike shop, who I'd photographed earlier.
Well, I was going to ask if there was some connection. They're taking Fremantle over the Murrays.
Yeah, well, it looks like it. Yeah. But yeah, so she's part of the buzzing Ray Avenue, which is...
Ray Avenue is a buzzing little place, isn't it? And there's an interesting mixture of shops and on South Terrace nearby as well.
She said she tried to close, but people kept knocking on her door, so she eventually... just thought, well, I'll open my door again.
Being beaten down by the customers, you have to open up.
Yeah.
And this could be at Cicerello's.
Sure is. That's Cicerello's. That's Nick Unmack. He's the owner. And actually someone who was a good family friend of ours when I was a child. He sort of talked about just, you know, there was no value in doing takeaway. He sort of crunched the numbers and it just wasn't worthwhile for such a big venue to be doing takeaway. Because a lot of people did shift into takeaway, but it just wasn't worthwhile for him. He was pretty keen. He kept the lights on, kept the music playing each day and just wanted, you know, the locals particularly to feel
like
there was just
some
life going on.
Frio Social kept their lights on as well, and you, on the hand, you say, why are they wasting electricity? But on the other hand, you say, this is, you know,
he said, you know, for the minimal cost that it was, he just thought it was, you know, really his duty to be there and not, it's like, no, we're keeping the lights on for our local community.
The name Unmack around Fremantle is an old name. It would just be a law firm I can remember called Fring, Unmack and Cullen, I think, down here. So we move on. And, well, you couldn't present Fremantle photos of eateries and cafes and coffee shops and businesses without having Gino's.
No, that's right. So I went in there to actually, ideally, having a photograph of Laura, the owner.
Yes.
But she said, no, I don't photograph. No one photographs me, but I had a chat to her, and you know, the little story comes from our conversation. But I took a photograph of a couple of her staff, and that was actually the day that they reopened for takeaway.
That was a great day when that happened. I was trying to get some photographs as well, but that's a lovely photo. I think it's one of my favourites amongst all of these. And Claudio there is a bit of an institution. Doing the doing the espresso and look at the look on Daniela's face.
Yeah, lovely. No, I love that one because that's sort of I love street photography and just that, you know, sort of capturing moments, and that's much more of
wasn't it?
Rather than doing a profile, you know, a portrait shot of somebody.
But this in a sense is both of those things. It's both a moment and it's pose, but it's got a hell of a lot of life to it. So who and what?
So this is Kate Perotto-Nelson. She's the owner of Fremantle Yoga Centre. So that's down at E-Shed, just on the wharf there. It's just the most beautiful space inside.
And just to prove it, she's in a yoga position that we don't recommend that our viewers...
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, they obviously had to shut down all their classes, but shifted to doing live classes online, and said the response was just amazing.
The online response?
Yeah.
And yes, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I'm due to get back to my Pilates inspired exercises shortly to see how many people do go back or continue to do it from home and not just.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing she said was, you know, a lot of studios put up, you know, videos and classes that people could do but didn't have the live classes, which she said just their students just loved because it gave that connection.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was really successful for them.
And then we've got Simon.
We have Simon, yes, at More and More Cafe.
It's a lovely cafe, lovely courtyard, and he's a very friendly guy.
It's great, and it's just such a beautiful space in there. Going back years, I often used to go and take my laptop and right from there, so it's I haven't done that for a while, but it was.
And a laptop will travel.
Yeah,
it's good to be a creative, Georgina.
That's right.
You can sit on a sidewalk.
Yep, and enjoy the jazz that they have going there on a Friday morning.
Friday morning, that's right. So we move on, and where are we here with these guys?
Okay, we have a couple of the owners of Strange Company.
And of course, we do.
Yeah, I...
Where's the photograph taken? It's just on outside looking in, is it?
Yeah, pretty much looking in. You know, they've got that big blue, it's kind of like a garage door with holes in it, sort of a bluey green. So they're underneath that, and then the main part of the restaurant and bar is in there. The bar is sort of through there.
Bars like that really quite badly hit, of course, by Corona. You just couldn't be shoulder to shoulder with people ordering at a bar, and everyone inside Strange Company was always relatively close. It was the attraction of the place. Fabulous.
Yeah, no,
fabulous.
That's right. And I was walking past this day and found Greg, he's the one on the right, with the mop. And so I stopped and chatted to him, and I recognised him as the owner, and I thought, oh, this is good. I'll get a photo of him right now if he's happy to have a photo and have a chat. And it just so happened they were preparing to reopen the following night, and that was at the period where they could only have 20 people, but it would have been the perfect time to go there, you know, get your own group of 20 friends and have the place
take
yourself.
It over. Well, it still is. Try and book it out. It was one of the great additions to Fremantle, which has inspired people to do, of course, a range of other things, and we'll probably get to some of them. And where are we here?
So this is Spring Into Fitness Gym, which is on Fremantle Oval, pretty much just sort of under the grandstand there.
This is the one as you come down Parry Street, I think, opposite the entrance
the
markets.
And
not far from John Jerovich taking that great mark.
That's right, yes. So this is Adrian Ricciardello, and his partner have been... George have been owners of that for the last 3 years, and so their gym, you know, completely shut down and everything, as all gyms did, and sort of as this photo was taken they were just getting back to being able to do some classes, some very small classes, and sort of by appointment personal training.
Now I've thought for a long time that City of Fremantle should be renamed the Republic of Fremantle. But I think this place might be.
Oh, not this one.
Not this one.
No. So
oh, look at that.
There is a Republic of Fremantle. I haven't actually
been there. Oh, you have to get in
there.
Because they have got similar sort of stuff. So, so where are we here?
This is actually one of the first times I've branched outside of the city centre. This is in O'Connor.
Oh, yes.
That's the Fremantle Spirit Company. And this is Mike Keeble. He's the owner there. And, his was an interesting story because he started this distillery late last year, and he's producing gin and whiskey and rum. But when all this happened, he shifted to distilling ethanol for hand sanitizer.
Well,
so all the wine, basically he was given wine. The wine came from Ferngrove Wines.
Yes.
And he ultimately distilled 34,000 litres of wine into ethanol, to 80% ethanol.
Isn't that just a fantastic story? And it's going to be interesting to see whether things like the production of hand sanitizer continues in anything like the same volumes going ahead, because these guys have got all this fancy, expensive distilling equipment with all these beautiful sort of copper colours and things to them, have turned wine into ethanol, not into gin, but into hand sanitizer. They should have just got people to drink and, you know, taken a Trumpian view of the world.
Well, yeah.
There's a guy in Belarus I was just reading who has defied, he's a totalitarian ruler, Lukashenko, I think his name is, who just said we don't have to worry about corona, and insisted that people just drink vodka and that would get rid of it. So we could have taken...
How are they doing with that?
Well, apparently not very well, very well. They've got 4 times the infection rate than nearby Poland, and they've got about a quarter of the population, something like that. Anyway, hopefully we're back to drinking gin.
Yeah, he's reconfigured all his equipment. He's back to distilling gin and rum and whiskey.
Now, here's a really important-looking person with a human being.
Yes, that is a little, not-so-little, puppet from Spare Parts Puppet Theatre, and he's there with the artistic director, Philip Mitchell. So, obviously the arts world has been... Terribly
it's
hit.
It's been decimated, hasn't it?
Yeah, and there's really not much support, it would seem, for...
So the ultimate of the gig economy, isn't it? It's manifestation. People who get a gig, get a job, and then you read that a lot of the people didn't qualify for the JobKeeper program because they couldn't show they were in some permanent
employment. That's right. So, it's devastating for the industry. They've, Spare Parts Puppets, they've you know, launched some great online activities and workshops and things, but they're not going to be back to the theatre. They pretty much cancelled and postponed everything for the full year. They're doing a school tour in term four, but the theatre, the first show back at the theatre, won't be until January.
And the cinemas, I think, in Essex Street are reopening in July. It's taking a while, but it's been those sorts of places that have been the hardest hit in a way, isn't it? Theatres. I don't think the West Australian Symphony Orchestra at the Concert Hall is resuming just yet. They're cancelled again through to July. I guess everyone's waiting to see what happens. Let's hope spare parts can get back sooner than that. So we look like we're way up above the National Hotel here.
Yeah, Fremantle's only rooftop bar.
Well, we don't want too many of them.
No, no. At the moment,
isn't it a brilliant? Isn't it a brilliant redevelopment, refurb, and what a great lookout!
Oh, it's amazing! It's such they've just done an amazing job with the refurbishment of that beautiful old building, and yeah, the view you get up there, it's how you should sort of see, you should be able to see Fremantle, because you just see in every direction and,
yes,
you know, you just see all the things that are so important to Fremantle. And yeah, it's an amazing space. And so they, when they reopened, he said it just went insane. Carl Bullers, he's the owner. Yeah, so when he wondered if it was going to be worthwhile opening for 20 people, but the madness came. People queued up all day, all night on the day that they were allowed to queue for have 20 people inside, and well, for the whole venue. So you're talking outside, inside, upstairs, the whole lot could only be 20 people. But it was a constant flow, and it was really worthwhile.
It's unfair in some ways that institutions like Geno's and the National Hotel should have to take on some public responsibility. But when they open the doors and turn on the lights, it helps to make people feel a bit better about themselves.
Well, that's the thing. And he said it was so busy because, you know, some places still hadn't opened yet, and people were just so excited to be able to go out. And he said, you know, there's something about going to a pub and getting a draft pint of beer, which most people can't do at home.
Yes, absolutely. And then this might be the last of our photographs this morning. Where are we here?
Yep, so that again is just outside Freo. That's just across the bridge in North Fremantle at Old Bridge Cellars, and that's Cass Beeson. She is the owner there. Well, she owns it with her husband Mark and their son Jay. And
great wines,
and they also stock my favourite ginger beer. But yeah, it's my favourite bottle shop.
What's that, Matzo's or something?
No, it is Lick Pier.
Ah, does it have alcohol in it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
Yep. But yeah, no, we've gone to Old Bridge Cellars for many, many years and have done some great wine tasting dinners out in their back warehouse. And yeah, one thing they've done during this period is called Blind Wine Time, which is sort of because normally they would have Friday afternoon wine tastings in the store, but they started doing Blind Wine Time on the first Friday of every month, where people would purchase a ticket online. Three wines would be selected, they'd be delivered out to the participants, who would taste the wine on the Friday night, answer a few questions about the wine, and then there'd be a live reveal from the winemaker, who would talk about the wine and how it was done and a bit about themselves. So
basically a webinar on wine.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But she said it's, you know, been amazing how many people are just getting much more of an appreciation for wine and pairing with meals and doing so much more cooking at home, and that their business has been booming. So while everyone else is trying to get JobKeeper or is qualifying for JobKeeper, they were putting on more stuff.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And I'm sure there are going to be all sorts of new business models that come out of the corona time. Have you enjoyed it in some peculiar way?
The project or the whole coronavirus isolation?
Both, really, because the project is your business model in a sense during this time, your response to what's been happening. Do you think what's been the lesson you've learned from it? I imagine most business people have been quite agitated and dispirited and trying to work out when it would be over and what they would then have to do to embrace the after-corona period.
Well, for me, I mean, it's been great because it did make me launch into doing my own project on something that I'm passionate about. You know, I wouldn't have sort of taken the time to do this otherwise I would have been searching for paid work, as was my plan. But in terms of the whole sort of isolation period and everything, to be honest, it didn't really make much of a difference to my family. We tend to sort of spend a lot of time at home by ourselves anyway. We've got two young kids, we've got a big block. We could still go to the beach, I could go running, you know, do the things we normally do. But I think for society in general, there's been so many positives out of it, just in terms of slowing down, not just madly running from one activity to the next, be that social engagements or kids' extracurricular activities. Mm. You know, I was certainly seeing more families just out and about in the neighbourhood, just riding or up at Monument Hill, just enjoying slow time with each other. Just, you know, normal, really normal, simple things.
We've all had eyes on the street. With time to, yes, meet the passing glance of your neighbours or others walking by and actually exchanging a few words and not being flat out. Inessential appointments were no longer in the calendar. It's been a lovely time. I'm wanting to write in praise of COVID.
Yeah.
Despite all of the bad things.
Yeah, I mean, obviously at a cost, but I think it's
and what's your take
been
on
a great reset.
What's happening then with this business life, at least that part of the business life of Fremantle that you've depicted in your photographs?
Look, you know, some have, it's just been a matter of survival, and, you know, I think probably the telling time will be once JobKeeper finishes. You know, for a lot of them, that's when they'll really sort of see the effect and see whether they can continue. There are, from what I hear, a couple of businesses that won't be reopening. But yeah, look, I think on the whole, from what I've seen, most have scraped through. A lot have reinvented themselves, and, you know, that's been really fantastic. And some have thrived, which, it's always nice to see those really positive stories at a time of perceived crisis.
Well, on behalf of, I'm speaking sort of globally and royally, on behalf of the rest of the world, but people around Frio who will listen and look at your photos, thank you very much for being inspired to go out and capture these moments and this period in time. You must make sure they go beyond being stored on Instagram, and one would have thought, as has been suggested, I think, that the Battie Library would want to take hold of the photos, the people in them. They're a lovely record, plus your notes about what was happening at these points, and hopefully this discussion today will be a nice vignette of it all too. So thank you, Georgina, for sharing it.
No, thanks for taking the interest and having the chat with me.
We'll see you around.
Indeed.